Every year at this time, we give a shiur about Erev Pesach. Usually we speak about Bedikas Chametz. I'm getting bored of it. So we're going to talk about some other topics. Erev Pesach has this very strange practice called the Fast of the Firstborn. And it's not really a fast in the sense of, I don't know of anyone who has ever fasted. I think our practice is that we all make a siyum, we go to a siyum, and we get rid of the fast. I actually had someone, Akiva Coleman, Daniel and Anat Coleman's son, came over to me on Shabbos, and he said, Rabbi Schwartz, how come I can't make a siyum and eat on Yom Kippur? That was his question. So I'd say, Akiva, that's a great question. But the answer is much harder to give than what the question actually is. So I want to talk with you, I want to discuss with you tonight, is what is the source of this Fast of the Firstborn, the Fast of the Bechorim, and how come we get rid of it through a siyum. This is sort of our objective. So let's begin. The earliest source, it's not clear exactly when this source is from, but there are two early sources for Tainis Bechorim or Bechoros. Shulchan Aruch calls it Tainis Bechoros. One source is Maseches Sofrim. Maseches Sofrim is one of the minor tractates. Now, minor tractates, just for the historians among us, are probably not Talmudic. They're probably Gaonic works that were incorporated and became part of the volumes of the Gemara, but okay, it's a minor tractate in the Maseches. What?
It made the cut.
It kind of, sort of, a little bit made the cut. In other words, it's printed in the Vilna Shas, but it didn't make the cut in the sense of it's not studied, right? When you learn Daf Yomi, for example, you're going to learn Talmud Bavli. There's even one Masechta in Talmud Yerushalmi that they learn in Daf Yomi. They learn in Shkolim. But ain't no one, pardon my expression, study Maseches Sofrim. It's just not done. Right, but there are some sources, and there's many of the sources of Maseches Sofrim are things that are not exactly practiced the way it appears in Maseches Sofrim, but Maseches Sofrim is the earliest source of some of these. Practice, for example, reading the Megillos on the Yomim Tovim. Rus is not there. Koheles on Sukkot, Shir HaShirim on Pesach, that's in Maseches Sofrim. What? Shir HaShirim and Erev Shabbos. I don't think many people read Shir HaShirim and Erev Shabbos. Many people read Shir HaShirim after the Seder. There are different times we read Shir HaShirim. Some years I speak about this at the end of Pesach, coming attractions. But the fact is, the source of this is in the Maseches Sofrim. So now, the Maseches Sofrim comments over here that the month of Nisan is a very special month. It's a month that, as we know, we don't say Tachnun, and we don't fast during the month of Nisan. And if there's a funeral, Rachman Son, during the month of Nisan, we don't give Hespedim. Right? So, how come, Maseches Sofrim asks, V'lo me'in Misan in B'chodesh Nisan, how come we don't fast during the month of Nisan? Right? The answer is, right, there were three fasts of Esther and Mordechai. How come these fasts happened in Nisan? How come we don't fast in Nisan? Says Maseches Sofrim, Nei Shebe Echa B'Nisan Hukama Mishkan. U'shnei Masa Nisiyim Hikrivu Karbanam U'shnei Masa Yom. The 12 Nisiyim offered their sacrifices during the first 12 days of Nisan, one day per Shevet. And everyone made a Yontiv. And V'chein Lo'asid Lovo Asir HaMikdash Lehibanos B'Nisan L'kayim Mashinam Ha'in Kol Chadosh Tachas HaShemesh. Maseches Sofrim adds that the reason why we're happy in the month of Nisan, we don't say Tachnun, because as we know, nothing makes a Jew happier than not saying Tachnun. Not saying Tachnun is, right? I mean, it's amazing, like, how the little things in life give us such intense pleasure. Isn't it? Like, it's great. But the fact is, how come we don't say Tachnun? How come we don't fast in Nisan? The answer is because the Mishkan was put up in Nisan, and the Beis HaMikdash will be put up in Nisan, because the Pasuk says nothing is new under the sun. Therefore, we say Tachnun the entire month of Nisan, and we don't fast until Nisan is over. But, Ella, HaBechoros, Mis'anin Be'erev Pesach, V'atznuin, Bishvil, HaMatzos, Kedei Shikonsu LePesach, B'taiva. The Bechoros fast on Erev Pesach, the firstborn's fast, and the tenuim is probably like the very finicky people. They also fast before Pesach because they want to eat matzah well. There's a certain type of person, I don't know anyone like this, but if they would eat anything at all on Erev Pesach, they wouldn't be able to eat matzah. So therefore they fast in order to eat matzah properly. Now that I really understand. You know, if matzah is a mitzvah d'oraisa, we mentioned it's the only Torah commandment of eating during the year, so I understand why I'd fast if I couldn't otherwise fulfill the mitzvah of matzah. But what is this about the firstborns that they fast during, they fast on Erev Pesach? So the traditional explanation that's given is the explanation of the Torah. The Torah says, well, you know what? What happened was the firstborn Egyptians were all killed in Makas Bechoros. That night when we left Mitzrayim, Vayhi b'chatzi halayla v'ashem hikak kol b'chor v'eretz Mitzrayim, right? God kills all the firstborns. The firstborn Jews were very happy that they didn't die, and therefore we fast. Now, this is the official explanation. There's a problem. Like, what the heck? Right? If I'm happy, usually I don't... Right? Isn't this the explanation? Standard explanation? So if I'm happy, why am I fasting?
Survivor guilt.
What?
Survivor guilt.
Yes. Maybe. That's not really joy, though. Survivor guilt, if anything, is something that diminishes the joy that I should otherwise have.
But we say we should really, we were worthy of being killed, so we weren't. So,
One sec. What did you say, Henry?
From what Danny said, if we were quote unquote worthy of being killed, then why were we worthy of being delivered?
Why are we worthy of... Well, the firstborns are why they're going to be killed. And the real answer is that we really weren't so worthy of being delivered, right? We have to put it all on the table. Ultimately, we were supposed to be... Right, we were supposed to, right, we're in the 49th gate of Tuma. We weren't supposed to make it. It happens that for some reason God decided to have compassion on us, etc. But we really weren't supposed to make it. So what is it about this fast? Now, yes.
Can you say that the reason why,
I'm with you.
The other question is this, we're not happy that the Egyptians were really killed.
So we're saying again, that's sort of what Danny was saying in terms of it's almost like survivor guilt. It's like the Abu Draham and many Rishonim say that when we pour out the wine, like when we say the ten makos, etc., and dam v'ishritim rosashon, it's because we're not ben pola yivchal tismach. Right, our joy is somewhat diminished that others had to... This is what we were mentioning last night, that every element of joy on Pesach also has a parallel degree of some sadness. 4 cups of wine, that's great. We drink it, we're reclining, we're really happy. But the wine is red. And it reminds us of the blood. Right? We take a sweet vegetable, we dip it in salt water. You take a bitter vegetable, you dip it in charosis, which is sweet. We are trying to combine, this is one of the themes that I think is very important, that we don't have pure emotions. We all have seder. Each of our emotions is mixed with the opposite emotion. Which
that's why this would fit in. Because why do we have the tannis for only the bechorim, not to be the tannis for everybody?
Right.
The bechorim, it's just a part of the remembrance that
it could be these are all possibilities. It could be that what it is a certain reminder that we shouldn't be completely happy and fasting, but it also begs the question even further, which is why then don't we fast? We have to really analyze two things. Why should we fast and why practically don't we fast? Right? And we have to try to explain both. Let's do one more source, one more primary source for fasting, for the Bechorim fasting on Erev Pesach. There's a Talmud Yerushalmi, right? Palestinian Talmud, pardon the expression. Amar Reb Levi. That's what the scholars call it for some reason. You saw that?
The Israeli.
They call it the Palestinian Talmud instead of the Jerusalem Talmud. It's really unbelievable, no? Amar Reb Levi. Ha'ochel matzah be'erev pesach kibba al arusoso beveis chomiv. Va'ba al arusoso beveis chomiv loka. If a person eats matzah before Pesach, if a person on Friday will eat matzah, so you get lashes as if a person is sleeping with his arusa in the father-in-law's house. An arusa is a wife who has not yet moved into your home. Remember, in the time of the Mishnah and the Gemara, there are two stages of marriage. There's Erisin and Nisuin. Erisin means that she's your wife completely. You are completely married, but it would take a year to prepare to move in together. So there are a married couple living separately. If a person eats matzah on Erev Pesach, and we'll analyze this in a few minutes, I hope, it's as if you're sleeping with your arusa in the father-in-law's home. Which, by the way, is probably not so good, right? It's probably right. You get lashes at. Again, there are so many. This is the famous joke that they say. It's a little off color, but you know, Achad Ha'am, the great Hebrew poet. So the tradition goes, Achad Ha'am said about this line in the Gemara: Ta'amti tam shnehem ve'ein tam shnehem shaveh. I tried both of them, and they're not not the same. So the tradition goes, it's slightly off color.
Just backing up a little bit, the business about not sleeping
She's your wife.
So why can't you sleep with her?
So even though she's your wife, you see, there are two stages of marriage in halacha. There's a stage of erusin, where she becomes forbidden on the entire world. But until this sheva brachas that are made, until you stand under the chuppah together, you're forbidden. In our world, we do both together, right? That's why under the chuppah, we have erusin first, right? And you give the ring, and you make the bracha asher, kidshanu mitzvosa v'tzivan al ha'arayos, v'asam al ha'arusos, v'tzivan al ha'arusos, lanu, right? That is the bracha on erusin. And then we have an interruption called reading the ksuba. Now that interruption used to take a full year. That, right, it was, you can't have Sam Weiss read the ksuba if you want to take a full year. But that interruption took a... Right. That interruption took a full year in Talmudic times between the Erisin and the Nisuin to prepare, and then they'd move in together and they had Sheva Brachas. Today we do everything together. Again, today means for the last 1,000 years. We do everything together. But that's the practice again. Now, so the Yerushalmi writes, and we'll talk about this in a few minutes, right? If I eat matzah on Erev Pesach, it's as if I am having relations with my arusa, my betrothed wife, who's not living with me yet, it's as if I'm having relations with her. Tani Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira Omer, bein chometz bein matzah osur. Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira says, on Erev Pesach, not only are you not allowed to eat matzah, you can't eat chometz either. This is called a bummer. There ain't nothing to eat. Right? You can't eat matzah, you can't eat chametz. Reb Simon, b'shem Reb Yishua ben Levi, lo haya ochel, lo chametz, lo matzah. He also did not eat neither chametz nor matzah on their Pesach. Lo matzah min hadod Reb Levi. He didn't eat matzah because of the statement of Reb Levi that's ke'ilo ba'al arusasa b'veis chamiv, v'lo chametz min hadod Reb Yehuda ben Beseira. He would not eat chametz because of the statement of Reb Yehuda ben Beseira. So the Gemara asks, one second. V'rebi tamid Reb Yehuda ben Beseira heva? Right? Was Rebbe a student, Rebbe Yehuda Maseira? Lo, here's a Talmud of Rebbe Yaakov ben Kodshoy. Ella begin to have a Bechor. In other words, we have a tradition that Rebbe did not eat chametz or matzah. And the Gemara first thinks, because he's a student of Rebbe Yehuda ben Maseira, who would not eat chametz on Erev Pesach either. So you may ask, but one second, Rebbe Yehuda is not a student of Rebbe Yehuda ben Maseira. He had a different teacher. His teacher was Rebbe Yaakov ben Kodshoy. So how come he didn't eat chametz or matzah on Erev Pesach? So the Gemara answers, oh, because he's a Bechor. Because he's a firstborn. Amir Rav Mana, Rav Yona, Abba, have a Bechor, but have a Ochel. Rav Mana says, one second, you tell me that a firstborn doesn't eat. But Rav Yona was a Bechor, and he used to eat on Erev Pesach. So Amir Rav Tanchun, lo min hada, ela min hada, Rebbe istnis heva, kar ocho b'yamam, ela v'ocho b'ramsha. Right? In other words, the Gemara says, no, the reason why Rebbe did not eat is not because he was a Bechor, but rather it's because he was an istnis. He was a finicky person, very sensitive guy. And if he would eat during the day, he couldn't eat anything at night. That's the conclusion of the Gemara. Now, this Yerushalmi, at one stage, says that a Bechor would not eat on Erev Pesach, but the Yerushalmi seems to reject that. Some say the Rush quotes that this Yerushalmi is the source of having a Bechor fast in Erev Pesach. But then everyone jumps up and down and spits wood and nickels and says, what the heck are you talking about? That doesn't make any sense. The fact is that the Yerushalmi suggested it, but then it moved away. Ultimately, the conclusion of the Yerushalmi is the reason why Rebbe would not eat on Erev Pesach is because he was a very finicky guy. And if he'd eat during the day, he couldn't eat at night. But, now, yeah.
Well, there's also the thing about once you burn chametz, you can't eat chametz anymore.
So you can't eat chametz once you burn the chametz. But Erev Pesach...
Because it's Erev Pesach and you don't want
to... So we'll have to talk about this in a few minutes. What does Erev Pesach mean? Right, Erev Pesach is the least defined term in Judaism. For the last 3 weeks, my kids have been walking around the house, and my wife is saying, and I'm saying, don't bring a cookie in that room! It's not Erev Pesach. It's 3 weeks before Pesach. What the heck are you talking about, Mom? Come on! Right, it's not Erev Pesach. Right, so Erev Pesach has this very elastic definition. It means anything from after Purim until Friday. Right, Friday for sure is Erev Pesach, right? But even on Friday, we'd have to question, when we say you can't eat matzah on Erev Pesach, by the way, there are three different positions in Rishonim what that means. When I say you can't eat matzah on Erev Pesach, the Rizah, the Baal Hamor, says that you can't eat matzah on Erev Pesach only from the time that you are no longer allowed to eat chametz. Okay? The Ramban says you cannot eat matzah Erev Pesach at night, from the time of Bedikas Chametz. The Rambam says, you can't eat matzah on Erev Pesach all day of Erev Pesach, but not at night. And that's really our practice, no? Technically speaking, we could eat matzah, Bedikas Chametz at night, but during the day you're not allowed to eat matzah. Technically speaking, that's the halacha. Now, one of the big issues that comes up, let me just finish this topic about the matzah, and I'll take your question in a second, Lottie. One of the big issues that comes up is when Erev Pesach falls out on Shabbos. So what do you do for the meals? Now, usually, you eat a teeny bit of challah and you flush it down the toilet. That's like standard practice. But let's say you have a hotel and you have 1,000 guests, right? You don't want to have 1,000 guests having to line up with their little bit of challah to flush it down the toilet. It could get cumbersome. Is there any heter of eating some sort of matzah on Erev Pesach? So there's a huge literature about this question. Technically speaking, we pass that matzah ashira, the egg matzah and the like, you could eat on Erev Pesach. Some people don't like eating matzah ashira on Erev Pesach because Ashkenazi Jews treat matzah ashira, treat egg matzah, like it's potential chametz. And that from the time that I can't eat chametz, maybe I shouldn't eat egg matzah either. So then, what do you do? So, years ago, in Eretz Yisrael, Rabbi Bezalel Zsolti, who was the chief rabbi of Yerushalayim, I remember I once heard from Ezra Neuberger, who's now the Rosh Kol in Baltimore, that when his grandfather, Rav Ruderman, visited Yerushalayim, he wanted to visit all the Rabbanim in Yerushalayim. So he went to Chacham Avadi Yosef, and he went to all the Rabbanim, the Dayan Weiss, or the Eidah Haredis, and the person he was the most impressed with was Rabbi Bezalel Zsolti. Tremendous Talmud Chacham. So Rabbi Bezalel Zsolti had this idea that he felt that maybe you could bake matzah not lishma. The type of matzah they have to eat at the Seder has to be baked lishem matzah mitzvah. Maybe I should bake matzah not lishma and eat that matzah in the hotels on Erev Pesach. Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach got really upset at this. He says, one second, all the Rishonim have such elaborate discussions about what can I eat on Erev Pesach that falls out on Shabbos, and no one just said, eat plain not lishma matzahs. So obviously this is wrong, and anything that looks like matzah and tastes like matzah, you can't eat. There's a huge discussion about eating these types of things on Erev Pesach, whether it's considered matzah or not. It's a long discussion, but Lottie has a question.
My dad had the minhag to stop eating matzah from Purim.
So some people have a minhag to stop eating matzah from Purim. The Mishnah Berurah quotes a practice that we don't eat matzah after Rosh Chodesh Nisan.
Right,
that's a common practice. That was the practice in my family always, that we don't eat matzah from Rosh Chodesh Nisan. That's a practice that's quoted in many poskim. Okay, but the fact is, this Yerushalmi is a very questionable source for the idea that a Bechor fasts. And it's hard to know. The source might be from the Masechta Sofrim. The Yerushalmi seems to move away from it. We're really not 100% sure what the source is. Now, just another bit of information. If the Yerushalmi is the source, we could come up with a very interesting chiddush v'halacha. The Yerushalmi says that you don't eat chametz and you don't eat matzah. Now, that might not mean that you fast. Not eating chametz and not eating matzah might mean that I can't eat chametz bread and I can't eat matzah bread, but I can eat fruits and I can eat other stuff. And if that's a source of fasting, so then this is an unusual type of fast, and that's not really a fast, it's a fast from bread rather than a real fast, which would be highly unusual, but it certainly is going to be possible. So now, what's the story with this fast? So just a thought from Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, which I think is interesting. Shlomo Zalman Auerbach asks the following question. He says, you know what? If the source that of the Bechorim fasting is because there was Makkos Bechoros and they should have died, and therefore they decide to fast for whatever the reason. First of all, why are they fasting? They should have a party. Second of all, Makkos Bechoros was really Seder night. So you would expect that the Bechorim should fast Seder night. If they can't fast Seder night, so shouldn't we push the fast to a time when fasting would really be permitted? Right? In other words, not a super happy day like Erev Pesach. Remember, Erev Pesach in temple times was like the busiest day of the year. They're all bringing the carbon Pesach. It's like a hubbub. Right? Why are you making the fast on that day? Make the fast a different day. So Shlomo Zalman Auerbach says, you know what? Maybe that's precisely the point. We have to go back to Chumash. In Chumash, we remember that the Bechorim, the firstborns, are supposed to do the Avodah in the Beis HaMikdash. At least the way Chazal understand the Pesukim. But what happened was, there was the Egel HaZohav, and because they sinned at the Egel, so Hashem says, you know what, Bechorim, you're not going to do the Avodah in the Beis HaMikdash. We're going to take it away from you and give it to Shevet Levi. So now, since Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, maybe that's the key to the mystery. You see, they're supposed to... This is the day. If I'm a Bechor, and whenever there's Avodah in the Beis HaMikdash, it makes me sad. How come everyone is doing work in the Beis HaMikdash and I'm not? And this depresses me, because I feel like I should be doing the work. I feel like I should be in the Beis HaMikdash. Now, every day I should be depressed, but the day I'm the most depressed as a Bechor is the day when there's the most Avodah going on in the Beis HaMikdash. Right? Remember, Karban Pesach, every Jew is involved, right? And they have these three groups, and everyone's going, and like they have the the Mizrakos going back and forth from the Kohan, and this one full empty, and they're passing it along. Right? And the famous comment of Rabbi Yosef Chaim Zandfeld said to Rav Kook that next year you should be knee deep in blood, and everyone thought that Rabbi Yosef Chaim Zandfeld was like cursing out Rav Kook, but the answer was he was really not saying that. He's saying it's going to be in the Beis HaMikdash, and there was blood. Right. They had there's blood up to their because the Korban Pesach, this is the height of, there's more Avodah going on in Korban Pesach day than the other day. So if I'm a Bechor, I feel terrible, because I feel like I should be the Kohen, I should be the one doing the Avodah, and I feel terrible that I'm not doing it. So maybe the reason why they didn't eat was not because there's a real fast. It's not because of the joy, right, like we were saying, but because they felt they couldn't do it. They're so depressed that they're not involved in the Avodah in the Beis HaMikdash, they felt they can't eat. But there's one thing that can bring a person back, that can cheer a person up and see them. And it's as if Judaism saying, you know what, Bechorim, you feel terrible that you're not doing the Avodah, but you should know that everybody has a connection to God directly by studying Torah. And we'll make a siyum, and that is better than the avodah, and therefore that brings the Bechorim back, and therefore they're happy. That's the drasha that Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach gave once, which I think is actually a very nice insight about how come we should fast, but we don't. Yes?
I think that's fabulous. I really like that. However, the thing is that I've been told that firstborn women should also
be... So we'll talk about that in 30 seconds.
No, but the thing is, if women should go, then women don't factor into that.
That's correct. Women didn't do Avodah in the Beis HaMikdash. Mm-hmm. Now, it happens whether firstborn women should fast or not. You know, Ashkenazi women have the practice that we don't fast. Faraday women have the practice that we do fast. We could see this in the Shulchan Aruch over here. Here. Look at the Siman Tuf Ayin Seif Aleph. It is like three sources from the bottom. It says the firstborn's fast on the Erev Pesach, whether you're firstborn from the father, firstborn from the mother. V'yesh misha omer, the Mechaber says that filo nekeva b'chora mis'ana, even a female b'chora should fast. V'ein haminakim, but this is not a practice, the Rambam says. There's an Ashkenazi women. Did I ever tell you the story? A few years ago, someone asks me a question. She says, Rabbi Schwartz, am I supposed to fast on Tainus Bechorim? So I respond to her that, you know, why is it that you want to fast on Tainus Bechorim? Is your husband a Bechor and your son is also a Bechor? The Rambam, the next Seif and Seif Beis, the Rambam says that even though women usually don't fast, but if you have a child under Bar Mitzvah who's a Bechor, so then the father should fast. I was supposed to fast for my son. I'm not a Bechor. My son Baruch is a Bechor. So I was supposed to fast for Baruch until his Bar Mitzvah. But let's say I'm also a Bechor, and my son is a Bechor. That could happen. No, I'm a Bechor, my son's a Bechor. So in that situation, the mother fasts. That's what the Rambam says. The Aruch HaShulchan, by the way, writes that we don't have any of these practices. A father never fasts for his son, a mother never fasts for her son. We don't have. So I ask this woman, and I say, is the reason why you want to fast because, you know, you have a son, and your husband is also a Bechor? Is that why you want to fast? So, the woman says, no, that's not the reason. I just want to fast. So I say, you know, our practice is that women don't fast Tainus Bechorim. So she says, Rabbi, you're always out to get the women. You take away anything the women want to do. So I say, you know what? Listen, I happen to have a strong feminist sense. You can fast. It's fine. You want to fast. Man, don't go to the sin. You want to fast, fast. There's no skin off my back. I just thought that was one of the funniest shaylos I ever got. Both Bechor La'av and Bechor La'im fast. Anyone who has a shame Bechor, anyone who's considered Bechor fasts. But our practice is that women don't fast. That's the Ashkenazi practice.
But
now,
the Sephardi women, do they go to the Seim instead of fasting?
So the practice that Sephardi women go to the Seim instead of fasting. Like, in fact, Reb Shlomo Zalman Arbach, who was an Ashkenazi, used to tell his wife that she should come to the Seim. Why not? Ultimately, if you can come, why not come? It's such an easy. The men should also be up all night preparing for Pesach. But the fact is, it's such an easy thing to do. Why not? It does add a great deal. By the way, the simple halachic reason why we don't fast when there's a siyum is because as follows. There's a general rule in halacha that when I have a minhag, and that minhag interferes with something which is a real halacha, so I throw the minhag away, and I keep the real halacha. No? If a minhag interferes with the din, so I throw the minhag away, and I keep the real din. This actually comes up in Hilchos Karban Pesach. There's an interesting discussion between the Rambam and the Ravid. There's something called Shuman Hagid. Shuman Hagid is the fat of the Gid Hanosha. Gid Hanosha is Aser Min HaTorah. Is a d'oraisa prohibition. The shuman hagid, the fat around the gid hanosha, the fat around that sciatica nerve, Yisrael kadoshim nahagubo iser. Holy Jews have a practice we don't eat the shuman hagid. The problem is by Karban Pesach, the Torah says that you have to roast it, the whole thing. Rosho akra'av v'al kirbo. You have to roast the entire thing. Now the gid hanosha doesn't give off any taste. The halacha is ain begin in benosin tam. But the shuman hagid gives off taste. So what do I do about the shuman hagid? Do I remove the Shuman HaGid or not? So it's a dispute between the Rambam and the Ravid. And one of the issues in that machlokes between the Rambam and the Ravid over there is when you have a minhag that interferes with halacha, what do you do? Because there's a minhag not to eat Shuman HaGid, but there's a real halacha called roasting the Karban Pesach completely, so shouldn't the real halacha trump the minhag?
Including the sciatic nerve?
Including the sciatic nerve, because technically speaking, the sciatic nerve doesn't give off any flavor. One of the halachos about Gidin, about sinews, is that there's no flavor that is given. So I can roast it, and that should not be a problem. Okay. But the Shuman Hagid does give off flavor. So that's a discussion between the Rambam and Ravid. Right? When the Minhag interferes with halacha, what do we do? This is also relevant for, this is a Gemara that I probably shouldn't quote, but I'll quote it anyway. It's relevant for the following idea. The Gemara in Brachas and Daf Vav tells a story about a person who doesn't come to Shul. So God inquires, what happened to this person? How come you're not in Shul? And God says, and the Gemara gives this commentary, that if he didn't come to Shul for a Dvar Mitzvah, because they're involved in the mitzvahs of God, so that's okay. But you didn't come for a shul for a dvar shus, you decided to do something optional, you're going to get it. What's going on over here? What's going on? So the Netziv comments on that Gemara that, you know what, davening with a minyan is not a strict obligation. It's a good minhag. And the minhag of davening with a minyan is because it gives an opportunity for the tefillah to be answered more easily. We have to remember that God is, whenever there is 10 Jews, God is present. Right? So if I'm davening on my own, whatever it means about the presence of God and the whole philosophy, but the fact is God is present whenever there's a minyan. So if I don't go to a minyan for a mitzvah, okay. But if it's for a reshus, if it's for an optional thing, then I get in trouble. What does that mean? That means that a mitzvah trumps the minhag of davening with a minyan. Right? If I have a real mitzvah to do, that trumps my, I probably shouldn't say this over, because minyan attendance will be going down, but a real mitzvah trumps an opportunity, trumps the minhag of davening with a minyan. There are many, many applications. Rav Gustman, in his Sefer End of Kedushin, discusses this, about minhag versus mitzvah, in the context of there are certain halachas and hilchos nida, the chumrat Reb Zeira, that they keep 7 days, no matter how much blood is seen. Women keep 7 days. So, 7 shivanakiyim, 7 clean days. The question is, that's a minhag, according to one version of the Gemara. If it's a minhag, if that ends up interfering with the real din, what they call orthodox infertility. Right? Sometimes women have the type of cycle that they ovulate in middle of their 7 clean days. So if it's a minhag, could the minhag, a minhag should not be able to trump a real din. So again, this is all part of that discussion. That could be the real reason why when we have a siyum, we don't fast. And this isn't true in Yom Kippur, unlike Akiva Coleman's question. Right? The basic answer is that the fast on Erev Pesach for Bechor is a minhag. Right? There's a practice. Right? There's a practice that they fast. And if it's only a practice, it's only a minhag. So a minhag, when it interferes with the real din, like the halacha, that when there's a siyum, you have to rejoice. So therefore, the halacha trumps the minhag. I should point out, by the way, that there are some who change the entire text of the Yerushalmi, of the Masechet Sofrim, of the Shulchan Aruch. They say the text is not that Bechoros mis'anin, the text is not that the firstborns fast, but it's how Bechoros mis'angim, the firstborns rejoice. They rejoice that they were saved. But you just add the word a letter gimel. Right? Bechor, again, it doesn't fit in context, but it's an interesting idea.
How about the 9 days? People
think siyum's. So siyum during the 9 days, again, that's probably a different type of thing. I have to admit, one of my friends commented that he never saw a fleishik siyum on Erev Pesach, he never saw a milchik siyum during the 9 days. So I'm going to prove him wrong, that Friday morning, God willing, I'm going to make a fleishik siyum. I instructed Oren to order food from L'chaim Caterers. I want a fleishik siyum. Because I think it's... Yeah.
Just about that thing about the 9 days, the late wonderful Rabbi Lukinsky, he was involved in Kippur Ma, stuff like that. Very serious.
Okay.
And he said when he was, you know, during the summer camp, the kids would say, "Oh, can we make a scene during the 9 days?" And he said, "No," because he didn't think it was good for their
Shabbos. Right. So again, yeah. So it is a real question. Like if we're supposed to be, you know, if not eating meat is because of commemoration for the Beis Hamikdash, etc. Yeah. So making a siyum might undermine some of that attitude. It is something to think about. That's something that we can discuss in 9 days. Just a few brief halachas in terms of making a siyum. Some poskim are very strict, and they assume that siyum has to be like a real legitimate corpus of learning, like a Masechta and Shas. Happens that Reb Shlomo Kluger and Moshe Feinstein both have tshuvas that if you finish even the smaller thing, you finish a Masechta Mishnayis, or you finish a small book of Tanakh, right? I remember someone asked, like, Ovadia. Can they make a siyum on Ovadia? I think Ovadia is 21 psukim, no?
But how you make?
Right. Again, so it happens that many poskim assume that if you learn it in depth, you can make a siyum. I've told people, someone asked me, they are Bukhar and they're flying somewhere in Erev Pesach, what should they do? So I said, take a Mishnayis with you on the plane, learn Mishnayis and then eat. Learn Mishnayis and then eat. Again, we can be lenient about the siyum. I think it's not proper to completely dismiss the idea the fast of the Bechorim. It is quoted in Shulchan Aruch, but the main idea, like we're mentioning from Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, is that Torah kind of gives us a degree of joy that overcomes the sadness that the Bechorim felt in Erev Pesach, so we should study some Torah. Okay, so these are some of the ideas we want to mention. We should have a Chag Kasher Sameach, a wonderful Yontif. Thank you for coming, and again, V'noch Hashem and Azvachim and Apsachim, that we should have a Yontif where we offer Korban Pesach, and we're all together very happy. There are comments in the Zohar, by the way, that in the third Beis HaMikdash, the Bechorim will do the Avodah instead of the Kohanim. Questionable. The Rambam writes that nothing will change in Halacha. So that's something to think about. The Zohar also says that Chazir is called Chazir because God will permit it for us in the future. These are big questions about the Zohar. The Rambam certainly did not hold to these Zohars. What to think about. Have a good Yantiv.